This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We told you earlier this week that federal energy regulators have rejected a Trump administration proposal to subsidize struggling nuclear and coal-fired energy plants. Now, a different but related story about how much, or even whether, really, subsidizing coal companies helps the people who live in coal country. Gwen Guilford went to Central Appalachia down near the West Virginia-Kentucky border to find out about that, and she wrote about it in Quartz. Gwen, it's good to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
We ought to say just at the get-go here that coal generates a lot of economic activity. Getting it out of the ground, sending it on, that's economic activity. What it does not do, though, is generate a whole lot of economic development, which is why now you have in Appalachia an almost mono-economic culture, right? There's no economic diversity.
Yes, that's exactly right. In fact, you talk to people in Central Appalachia and they call it a mono-economy or a monoculture, verbatim.
I thought I was coining a word there, but who knew? Who knew? Talk to me about this guy that you start the piece with who got out is really the deal.
Nick Mullins is a 38-year-old former coal miner. He's raised in a family of where his dad's a coal miner, his uncles are all coal miners, and his family is all like, do not go into coal mining, just don't, because they've gone through the hardships. And he, you know, can't quite figure out how to get it together to go to college, even though he was like National Honor Society and stuff like that. So he, you know, sort of swallows his pride and like turns his back on his family's advice and gets a coal job. Hmm. And for a while, that's great. And he's making good money because healthcare premiums are very minimal. And, you know, he's got a 401k plan. You know, this is middle class life. Coal is the only way to do that in most of Central Appalachia. And, you know, eventually he realizes, like, he does not want to be a coal miner for the rest of his life.
He eventually does get out, but his story brings up two points. One is that even though there are really few coal jobs in that area, there's only like 11,000 coal miners in all of West Virginia or something, you say. Those are the only jobs that can give you a decent wage. But also, the land is owned by people who are not vested in the community.
That's right. The land is not owned by people who are vested in the community. The upshot of all that is that, yeah, land, this crucial source of wealth, crucial source of, you know, intergenerational wealth, is incredibly scarce because of the vast, you know, tentacles of corporate ownership. So that makes it so other forms of potential wealth, like property, like small businesses, you know, struggle to thrive because there's simply no opportunity to, you know, build new anything.
When you ask these folks in this area of Central Appalachia what they think their future is now, the president who has promised to revive the coal industry, but with market forces who have decidedly different opinion, what do they say?
A lot of people are holding out hope that coal can be revived to some degree with the rollback of environmental regulations. But I didn't talk to anybody who, you know, was kind of hanging their hat on that.
Yeah.
What has happened in the region is like there are not obvious alternatives. It's not like, oh, but we have this other thing, so we'll just start investing in that. When you do this generation after generation after generation, you lose your good people. You know, there aren't great schools and there aren't good jobs to teach you new skills, and there's not the know-how to really create new opportunities for people who don't want to do coal mining, as Nick's experience revealed.
Gwen Guilford writes in Quartz about economics, most recently the coal industry in Central Appalachia. Gwen, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.